Talk News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 24th of August, Anno Domini 2008, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And we will be bringing you news, views,
all
stuff you can
now.
Use. What's all good about what?
Well, when you're God, a lot of folks think this stuff all just happens automatically.
And when Nick's here, it does.
And it does. It's just like folks said, well, where's the rant? Of course, we didn't do the rant because you're not here.
Right.
And it's just the whole flow of things.
We didn't have news because Nick's not here.
We missed you.
Thank you. I missed you guys. Not at all. Because I
don't blame you. I don't miss you guys when I'm not here.
Exactly. I was at the Renaissance Festival.
You didn't hear us talking bad about you on the radio, though.
No. In fact, I downloaded the podcast. Thank you, Chris. But I didn't even listen to it. I had it sitting there and sitting there and sitting there, and I never quite got to it.
And there was no poll.
Folks don't realize, you know, the stuff that goes on that, you know, we're just so used to. We come in, sit down in our seats, and we all have our jobs. But when it's moved around.
Right. It's hard.
It's difficult.
It's
you know,
hard.
It's like jumping into your seat. I'm used to sitting here and picking on you two guys.
Right.
And sort of being in the middle like I always have been for 19 years. And when I have to sit over to your seat, it's like, whoa, crap.
It's reality.
I got to think
of
what I'm
every
doing.
Sunday.
And I realized we were talking about it Friday night. I realized I did not go through the forums last Sunday, like I usually go through the forums on Sunday, because I was doing the call log, and
right.
We all had to do Nick's job.
Right. But it was a fun day.
Well, that's what counts, and that's how, as long as we're having fun, you know, I don't really care about anybody else. As long as we're having fun,
so
that's
basically,
really what
no more time off for you. You know what I'm saying? You're not allowed to take any more vacation. And
yeah, everybody feels that way.
Dave did
I'm
a great
bad.
Job. Dave really did. He steered the ship. You know what I'm saying?
I do not doubt
he
it.
Did well.
I do not
it
doubt it.
It was holding afloat barely.
But it floated.
But we
floated.
Didn't have
any
harbor.
That's we didn't sink.
Did you actually get to 1 o'clock?
Yeah.
Then it worked. That's really what counts.
Actually, I'm thinking next time that happens, Dave, you need to have some rum balls. You know what I'm saying? Even if it's July or August.
Yes.
That'll help us get through the show.
I'll come back for that.
That's a good idea.
I'm just sitting where Chris normally sits and eat rum balls and not talk all.
By 1 o'clock, we'd be just absolutely plastered, but it'll
good
make
show,
for some
though.
Great radio. I was going to say, great radio if we do that.
Right. Oh, you know what they say, any radio show you can walk away from.
That's right.
That's a good show. All right, even if you're staggering. Windows Vista has not fared well since its debut. I hope you're all sitting down. Its generally low reputation among customers has led one Forrester analyst to dub Microsoft's latest OS the new Coke of tech. While some studies have suggested that nearly a third of customers who buy a PC with Vista pre-installed may actually be downgrading those machines to XP. Only a third? Since other customers seem to wish the whole thing will go away, they don't want to hear about Vista at all. They'd rather hear about Windows 7, the upcoming OS for Microsoft that will be Vista's successor. And given the dismal consumer reaction to its latest attempts to market Vista, Microsoft seems willing to oblige. The sketchy reports of Windows 7 have lately grown into a steady trickle of hints and rumors. The catch is, not all of it sounds particularly encouraging. We'll be talking a little bit more about that at the top of the next hour, but that is our poll of the week. As you know, every week we do a poll, and this week's poll is about Windows 7. And the choices are Can't Wait, Vista Forever, XP Forever, Dixon Ticonderoga Number 2 Forever, the Mac, and the Linux. So you'll be able to vote in the poll. We'll talk a little bit more about that later, but as you call in today, if you've got something you'd like to say about Vista and it would pass the FCC censors, we'd be glad to talk to you about it. So let's go right to the phones. Our first caller is Andy from Rochester. Welcome, Andy. What's your question?
Good morning, Nick. Welcome back.
Thank you so much.
Boy, you took a lot of abuse last week and it sent you.
Maybe I will have to listen to
actually,
that podcast.
It was Amelia that got most of the abuse.
Yeah,
now I really have to listen to the podcast.
Yeah, they were having a lot of fun at your daughter learning to drive at your emotional expense.
Do you know she hasn't yet gotten her permit?
No.
Yeah, but think of the torture she's putting you through.
Yeah, that's the truth.
You know, it's more or less like a terrorist. He's got this mental thing holding over your head.
Yeah, right.
Just waiting to pounce. Don't know when she's going to lay it on you, but she's got the power. Of course, she's not listening right now, so we can say this and get away with it.
That's right.
But of course, sometimes the anticipation is better than the actual event.
Yesterday, at a party, she turns to me and said, "Dad, when you get a new car, can I keep this one?"
And the answer is?
Oh, hell no. How do you think I'm going to afford the new car? This one goes.
Right.
Oh,
new, when I say new car, I mean new to me. It's probably not going to be a new car, but... That's neither here nor there. Anyway, did you actually have a question, Andy, or
yes,
were just
yeah, I did.
Taking up all your time?
But that's okay. Very quickly, as one who's done this twice with two children,
yeah,
high school driver ed.
Yeah, yep. Ain't that the truth? Money off your insurance and everything else.
Oh, yeah, the blue card, and you have somebody who isn't dad teaching them how to drive.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, my boss Jackie's been going through that, too. Her daughter Jessie is learning to drive. Had to send her to driving school. Couldn't teach her themselves.
Well, and that's the problem.
That's
I taught my
move.
Goddaughter to drive. Yep. I taught a couple other of my friends' kids to drive. A parent can't teach their kid to drive. They just
I did. I have trouble teaching my wife to use the computer.
All right, we're moving on now because she'll be coming through that door any minute.
She knows it.
I started teaching my kids when they were 10, though. I'd say, okay, now here's why I'm going up to this light in this way, and this is why.
Well, that was a big thing. My grandparents had a farm, and we as kids spent all our summers at the farm. And the big deal was when you were tall enough to reach the pedals of the truck, so you drove during the haying.
Right.
Because the younger kids were on top of the truck stacking the bales, and the older kids were in the fields throwing the bales.
Right.
I had like 300 cousins when I was growing up.
Yeah, right.
and my uncle waited to do the haying until the reunion. So we were all there that week.
Nothing wrong with that.
Andy, are you actually still on the line?
Yeah, I'm still there.
By golly, you're persistent. What's your question?
Okay. Now that we've gotten that out of the way, this parenting thing is rough. Two quickies here. Service Pack 3 for XP, have they resolved the problems for AMD processors?
They say they have. I won't promise that.
Okay, so it's the allegedly they fixed the problems? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I recently had to take Norton System Works off my old laptop. It's
good.
Pentium
3. That's a good thing.
Well, you know, I've used the program for years. I kind of like it.
It's a memory hog.
Well, yeah, System Works and all the internet suites just try to do so much, they just bog your computer way down. Yeah,
I didn't let it do everything. I would select certain things.
Oh, you're selecting? Okay.
I would run the antivirus religiously, and I liked Norton Utilities, and that was one way to get the two of them together. But I had to get it off because on load up, it's an old Pentium 3 Toshiba. It's about 7 years old. I inherited it from my son. It's one we bought him when he was in college.
Right.
But sitting around, and I needed a laptop, so I did a little couple things to it. I got a new charger brick for it because there's a kink in the cable. And
right.
The overly generous 8-gigabyte hard drive just wasn't hacking it anymore. I can't imagine why. So we popped it up to 80, and that was fine. But it's still just logging the processor down, and I can't add any more memory to it because it's very restricted.
Right.
So we pull off the System Works. I got Avast on there. Still slows down a little of boot up, but once Avast comes up and says, I'm updated myself, then it's fine.
Right.
But what I don't have anymore is the Norton Utilities, specifically the Norton Windows Doctor. What do you guys have in your bag of tricks that I can replace Norton Windows Doctor with? It was basically a registry cleaner, straightener out.
I found one, a program that is great. It's free. And
it's good.
Yes, it's called Revo, R-E-V-O. And instead of using the Windows add remove programs, I use Revo. Now, with Revo, when you pull it up, again, like I said, it's free, you have four options. I always go down to the very bottom one. Select that. Because what it does is it uninstalls the program properly, and then it goes not only into the program's folder, it also goes into the registry and removes all the items in there, getting them out. Thus,
properly.
keeping your registry clean.
So you don't need another type of registry cleaner.
Yeah, because that's the whole problem with registry cleaners. They go in, they uninstall, but, man, they do not clean anything up in the registry.
Or they give you a whole list of, here's things in the registry you might want to address, but then you have to know how to do it. We run into the same thing on the Mac. There's cleaner programs for the Mac that finds what it calls unused files, and then you have to decide if you need that file or not, and it may be unused because you haven't run that program in a couple of days.
The thing with the Norton WinDoctor, it would go through and it would clean up all the ActiveX stuff. There always seemed to be a lot of that floating around. It would find unused or incorrect shortcuts to documents, which basically happens anytime you move a document from where Windows thinks it should go to where you actually want it to go. Things of that, it just take a lot of the junk out of the registry to keep it from building up. And I was just wondering, you know, the Revo seems to work well if you're actually uninstalling a program, but this was more like a reg cleaner or something that would actually just go through and look for things that Norton said were problems and would clean it out.
Well, there's a program I've never used, but it's called CCleaner.
Yeah, CCleaner is very good. I've used it.
We've talked about a couple different registry cleaners in the past. PC Magazine has a couple of them that are pretty nice.
Yeah, I would go with the ones, if we're going to recommend anything, go up to PC Mag and or download.com. It's by CNET. And they've got a number of utilities up there which they've beta tested, are safe, and will do an okay job.
Yeah, take a look at CCleaner.
We talked about one called Registry Robot.
Right.
RegCleaner.
www.ccleaner.com. Take a look at what it does. It's free. And it does a whole bunch of stuff.
So that's the letter C and then cleaner?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, all one word. CCLEANR.com.
E-N-E-R.
One last thing.
Yeah.
The time for sound bites because of the Buffalo Bills.
We have no idea.
Coming back. They used to do this years ago when they had the Bills. When were you guys on when that was going on?
The game didn't start until 1, so we ran from 11 to 1 or 11 to quarter to 1.
Oh, okay. So they're starting earlier this time.
Yeah, they're having the pregame show and all
and
that
the stuff. And the pre. We're hoping to find out the final definitive answer this week.
Yeah, because originally we were going to do a webcast, and then after the webcast, we're going to stay here in the studio. Was our game plan, and then do an hour in Second Life.
But now we're not sure. We have no idea at this moment.
Next week we should have an answer because the week after that, the Bills start. The 7th is their first game.
And that's understandable. The station has been making its plans and not finalizing them till the last minute just to make sure they had
things
as many options available as they could. So the theory is we'll find out this week, and we'll be able to tell you next week.
Which will be the
31st.
Right. The 31st. All right, we are going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Wright, Rob Linton, ladies and gentlemen. Me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Hey, guess what? 5 more internet providers in the Rochester area, including Frontier, have agreed to block websites that provide images of child pornography. In a press conference earlier this week at the Rochester Child First Network on South Avenue, State Attorney General Andrew M. Cuomo said Frontier citizens, LocalNet, WildBlue, OneStream, and WINC Communications signed agreements with his office. In all, 13 area internet providers in the Rochester area have agreed to block child pornography. Cuomo has also signed pacts with such national providers as Time Warner, AOL, Verizon, Sprint, and AT&T. Cuomo has undertaken a statewide crusade to block child pornography by threatening providers with lawsuits if they are aware of their service being used to transmit child pornography and they do nothing about it. Instead of going after people who upload and download child pornography, Cuomo said his office felt a better tactic was to turn off the faucet by pursuing providers that made it possible. Now, I got to say that I am 100% against child pornography.
Mm-hmm.
Hand me a child pornographer and leave the room. That would make me very happy.
Mm-hmm. And
on
one
the
of
other
you will
hand,
leave.
Exactly right, and it won't be the other one. Now, on the other hand, I do not like the idea of turning the internet service providers into police.
I'm with you.
My question
100%.
Is, how are they going to know unless it's someone's job to look at every single website and see girls and then track down their IDs?
That's the thing. It's going to be...
So it's now someone's job to look for child pornography.
Right. What? Well, more importantly, they're going to fail.
Yeah.
It's that simple. They're going to fail.
That's a
and
guarantee.
That just opens them all up for lawsuits.
Exactly.
AOL had that problem before. They should I'm shocked that Frontier is doing this because they're the phone company. Phone companies spent so many years saying to everybody, look, we're just the carrier. If you want to swear on the phone, if you want to make dirty phone calls, that's not our problem. We're only carrying the signal. Content of the signal is somebody else's problem.
Yeah,
and now
all
they're
the...
for it? That's just a very
bad
idea on their
part. Well, the government is just
part.
Trying to find somebody else to point the blame on, because It's the World Wide Web. Yeah. What part of that doesn't the government understand?
Well, and the reality is they want to look like they're doing something. This won't stop
anybody.
That's
like one hand clapping.
It's great for the politicians to all come out against something like this.
Well, I voted for this. Yeah, and it means zip. Right.
Well, when I saw this news article, I thought to myself, you mean they haven't already blocked it? Then I read further and said, okay, they've made this pact. Well, that's a contract, right? Now, as soon as they break the contract by not having something blocked
one
that they agreed to,
and somebody sues,
Cuomo can go and sue the ISP because he broke the contract.
And they have deep pockets.
That's not right. That's not solving
your
problem.
You remember all the ironic lawsuits back in the AOL days? They tried to ban the word breast, and all the breast cancer people got censored. So then they got sued for that. Then like a month later, they got sued for letting an anti-Semitic message going through.
Right.
So they're sued for censoring and they're sued for not censoring.
All right. But here's one thing, folks, and I don't think you guys will disagree with me. Nobody that I know of that does day-to-day emailing and everything else, I mean, granted, you'll get your adult porn, but nobody will get an email asking for child porn.
I've never seen one, certainly.
No, there will never be one, because that is such an elite group. Folks have to go looking for them.
And they're so afraid of getting busted, which they should be, that they don't
solicit. They will not sit there and publish email addresses. It's a very tight-knit club, which I think should be totally thrashed and tie them to the back of my truck, and I'll do a quick run up to the lake and back with them.
I want the video rights.
That's fine with me, because that's where they belong. As I've already turned in three people with child porn. You know how
I know
stand
you.
On
I
that.
Know, I know.
And I'll turn in my own family if I caught them with it. But the thing of it is in reality, and this is what I'm talking about, reality, folks, this is not going to do jack zip. Because it's one hand clapping. They're always going to find another way around it. And the folks that want the child porn have to go looking for it. They will not come to you.
Right.
So it's a lot of nothing.
Although, who's that guy a couple months ago, I think it was, and I can sort of see this happening. He was downloading legal adult pornography, and every now and then, you know, someone slips into the stream, someone who it looks too young. And then the big question, there was going to be a change in the law, that they were going to change the law from people under 18 to people who look under 18. How do you know it's not a 19-year-old that looks younger? You know, the joke is she's 23 with six kids and just happens to look like she's 12.
Right.
So it's nebulous.
It's also a big problem in Second Life. I mean, you can look like anything you want. So what if you look like a 9-year-old?
Yeah. Well, has it been the joke forever? Honest, Your Honor, she said she was 18.
Well, right. But that's the problem, and it's a huge problem. I don't know that there's an answer for
it. But
I don't think turning ISPs into cops is the answer.
That's what got, what's his name, the guy from Girls Gone Wild in trouble?
Yeah.
He had signed releases from the girls in his video saying that they were over 18 and had their driver's licenses, and he goes to jail because they lied.
Right. All right, our next caller is Trish from Henrietta. Welcome, Trish. What's your question?
Now we get off our soapboxes.
Let me get you off speaker. Sorry.
It's all right.
Hi there. How are you?
Peachy, good. How are you?
Very good. Hey, I got a question. I just about a few weeks ago put Vista antivirus software on my computer. Pardon me?
What was the exact name of the antivirus program you put on?
Well, I'm just looking at my link on my desktop, and that's all it says. So right off the top of my head, I don't know that.
Vista Antivirus is not a legitimate program. That's the problem. There are so many fake antivirus programs that cause more problems and infect you more.
Where did you get this software? Well, let's hear your problem first.
Well, every day, you know, we would turn the computer on and it would run, and it seemed to do a lot more than the McAfee I had been using.
Right.
And then I noticed just the other day that it wasn't running anymore. It wasn't popping up. And then I noticed the system was just dogging.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried to run the Vista antivirus software, and a window popped up every time, and it says the item vav.exe that this shortcut refers to has been changed or moved.
Yeah, vav.exe is the fake program.
Yep.
Vista Antivirus 2008 is a fake program, and it will infect you. It will install malware, and you're in trouble. Especially if you paid for it. Cancel that credit card immediately.
Oh, I did pay for it.
Cancel that credit card immediately. It is a fake program designed to install problems on your computer.
All right, now what?
First, Monday morning, cancel your credit card.
Now, the 24-hour customer service.
The 24-hour customer service, when you get off the phone with us, cancel your credit card.
Well, that transaction.
That transaction.
Well, well maybe the whole credit card, because now
they've got the number.
They've got the number. It's if you're lucky, both. They'll just steal that amount of money, but now the number is out
then
in the wild.
Then at the very least, you're going to have to run the security tango, but my suggestion would be
that
to take your computer to somebody like Dave or Steve where they can remove the drive, stick it in another machine, and clean it that way. That's the only way you're going to guarantee to get rid of what's in it.
We have programs on our link list on procedures on how to remove this bad thing, but it's complicated and tricky. And
And you're never going to be sure to get all of it. Take it to Dave or Steve and have them do it. And really, when you get off this call, cancel that credit card. I'm not kidding.
Thank you.
Sorry.
And how do I take this to Dave or Steve? How can I find them?
I am at 70 Empire Boulevard. It's a half a mile up from Dan's Craft on Empire Boulevard. It's NYPC, 70 Empire Boulevard, Monday through Friday. The number is 442-4843.
And we're at Jesse Group, 7716 Victor Menden Road in Victor, just off of 96.
So you get either end of the
city. Yeah. Although I'd suggest Dave. He's probably better at removing viruses than we are. We're mostly Macintosh, some PC as well.
Right.
Dave's got more experience in removing the viruses.
Unfortunately.
So NYPC.com.
Yep.
All right. Good luck, Trish. I hate to be the one to...
we have been seeing it.
Let's hope we caught it in time for her.
The legitimate antivirus from Microsoft Windows Defender is the legitimate antivirus from Microsoft. You see something that pops up that says Vista Antivirus, that sounds legitimate.
But see, here's the other thing that we've been finding, and just to prepare folks, that I'm seeing this virus also do, and I'm curious if any of our other listeners have run into it. When we go to remove it, it's doing something else with the Windows installer. And I can't figure out quite what yet. Because once we get it cleaned out and you try to install something else, it keeps saying, no, Windows Server can't install it. It's either not running or you don't have the permissions.
Yeah.
And we've been trying to hunt down and find out what the heck is blocking or stopping it. Because if you go in the system administrator, the service is running. You try to stop it and restart it. It says, sorry, you don't have the rights. So something somewhere is in there, and it is nasty. And we've had to, in some cases, once we get it out of there, have to do a reinstall over that.
Right.
And it's just the way it is, folks. I mean, you know, don't shoot the messenger when I tell you that we got to do that. I mean, it's the name of the game. I didn't put it on your machine, so.
Right, right. All right, our next caller, Frank from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Frank. What's your question?
Hi, on an earlier call, you recommended against using Internet Security Suites. I use Trend Micro, and I do notice my computer's a lot slower. What would you recommend in the alternative for using a suite?
Well, just what we do in Nintendo.
We don't recommend a suite as such, right? If you want to use an antivirus program, there are a couple of free ones that are good. AVG and Avast are very nice. If you want to use an spyware program, there's Super Anti-Spyware, there's
SpyBot,
Adaware. So it's a series of programs that do specifically good things of their own. You know, it's really the old Unix model. One program does one thing really well, and if you want to do something else, you use a different program.
Yeah, because I haven't found one program that does it all and does it good.
And the programs that try to do everything don't do anything well.
Right.
Well, it's a test to Norton and McAfee right now, and Trend Micro and Computer Associates. No offense to those companies, but they're trying to do everything to the whole system, as is Windows.
And
that's what's slowing the system down.
They need to add more and more features in every version to compel you to come back and buy the next one.
It's like a Swiss Army knife. Yeah. It's got a lot of functions, but none of them are great. And it's not a great knife.
How many tools on your Swiss Army knife?
Right.
Lots.
It's not a great knife. It's not a great scissors. It's not a great corkscrew.
It's a functional one.
What did I see when they had 100 tools on it?
Great.
It was 3 inches wide because there's 100 tools on it.
And so, if you want a pocket knife, get a pocket knife. If you want a screwdriver, get a screwdriver. Same thing with these things. Each one has one function.
For XP Pro, then, would you just use the Windows XP firewall?
Never.
Zone alarm for firewalls. And we list all these programs on our Security Tango website and the recommended procedures for it.
Right. That's at securitytango.com.
So you would run Zone Alarm and an antivirus at the same time?
They do two different things.
Absolutely.
One's a firewall, one's an antivirus. The other thing you need is an anti-spyware program. The other thing you used to need was an anti-pop-up program, but now that's built into browsers. And most of the garbage has stopped being pop-ups, and now they're pop-unders. Right. So we're going to need a pop-under blocker. So.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that's the idea, is you have multiple tools running simultaneously, but each one is smaller than the equivalent. I know that sounds wrong, but it's true. Even in aggregate, they're smaller than what you would have found in the Norton suite, and they're politer on the system than the Norton suite. One of the things the Norton suite does is really takes over your machine.
It has to have a hypervisor to manage all those smaller programs.
Exactly.
Okay, so if I want to uninstall the Trend Micro, would you use that Revo program you talked about earlier?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, if he's already installed Trend Micro and he installs Revo, will Revo, in fact, uninstall every tiny piece of it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Or it doesn't. So it's not one of those you have to install first. Remember how those uninstallers used to work? Yeah. You had to install it first?
Yeah, no. This Revo, though, it'll look for stuff that's already installed. And it will allow you to go through there.
Well, there you go, then.
I say option 4. Try it out, and it says, you know, you first uninstall the program, then it'll go to the registry, and you select all and say delete. Then it'll go into the programs folder, look for all the entries there, you select all, and delete. And it does a great job of keeping your registry clean and trim. That's what slows things down. Folks don't realize it. When they uninstall a program, they think, oh, I got rid of it all. But I guarantee you, which I don't recommend, so do not do this. If you were to look in your registry and do a search on it, you would find hundreds of entries, say of Norton. It would drive your fingers crazy trying to delete each one of them. I've done it before, so take it from me. And this program works better. It's easier. You won't get your butt in trouble coming to me and saying, oh, I accidentally deleted something in the registry I didn't mean to.
Yeah, if you don't really know what you're doing in the registry, don't go in the registry.
Exactly.
That's pretty simple. All right, our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's your question?
Guys.
Hi.
How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm wonderful. Just a couple of things. I called last week and talked to Dave about installing Service Pack 3. I was having problems with it installing, and mm-hmm. he got me through it. And I heard a gentleman ask about the problems being resolved with the AMD processors and HP.
Right.
If he runs HP Update, they had a fix. I downloaded it quite a while ago, and it also came through with Windows Update. So they do have a fix, and I installed it on my system, and it's running great.
Yeah, that's one of the good things about getting a name brand computer, one of the big names, is they do all the testing for you and will often have specific instructions for your model on how to upgrade to the new whatevers.
So that worked out wonderful. And also, you were talking about programs like Norton.
Registry cleaners?
Registry cleaners. I use a program called TuneUp Utilities. And it's a very non-invasive program. It's easy to run. And it has its own uninstaller. It takes care of those registry entries. And I've been using it since 2004. I've actually bought a couple different versions of it. And it's worked wonderful for me.
Yeah, that's at tune-up.com.
Right. Not free, but it's a wonderful program, and it even lets you tweak Windows and use different styles, colors, and all sorts of stuff.
Thanks. So. Thank you, Mark. I love it when callers call in with suggestions for us. Thank you so much. We're going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Wright, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is exactly 40 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. You know, on Friday, we had a question about internet radio dying, and it's certainly a possibility. There's going to be some huge royalty increases for internet radio stations. Right now, internet, for example, Pandora, which is an online station. You can get it on your phone. You can get it pretty much everywhere. Recording Industry Association of America, the RIAA, is about to increase the fees places like Pandora pay and thereby turn its small profits into a deficit. Right now, Pandora's royalty fees account for 70% of its revenue. According to the Copyright Royalty Board's decree, in 2010, Pandora's royalty fee will double. That's right, they're going to go from 70% to 140% of their income. 140% of their income. I'm pretty sure it's hard to make any money at 140%.
That's a good way to go bankrupt fast.
Exactly. Now, that's not true of places like Wham, where all of the shows are being paid for. It's certainly not true of like us, because we owned this show. But if you're broadcasting music like a top 40 station or whatever, the profits they're gonna really raise the rates for those. And it's kind of silly right now. You know, for example, traditional radio doesn't pay any per song royalty. Satellite radio pays 6 or 7% of their revenue to copyright holders, roughly 1.6 cents an hour. Net radio, on the other hand, pays for every song and every listener, 2.91 cents per listener per hour.
Now, you can treat this as a rhetorical question, but why are they allowed to discriminate? I don't understand that.
Somebody had a rule. Somebody made a law. That's how it happened.
And that killed a lot of the early internet radio stations. You may remember, you know, 10 years ago when the internet was first getting big, there were hundreds of internet radio stations. And then this law came out and someone did a stupid multiplication. Well, there's 200 million people using the internet, so you owe us $100 million a day for all of those potential listeners.
Right.
Because the
way a lot of radio stations pay for those licenses is by their potential listeners. So Wham has 50,000 watts. They reach X number of potential listeners. And so the songs are paid for based on that potential. And right. And
not Wham, of course, since Wham doesn't do
music.
But still.
Yeah.
But that's the same concept.
What would happen then if Pandora, for example, were to go to Mexico, Costa Rica, and start transmitting from there?
Then somebody would sue the local ISPs to block them.
Okay. Yeah.
Right? Same thing.
There's a lot of argument back and forth about it because a couple of months ago, there was this huge scare of, oh my goodness, internet radio's done at midnight because of this, and this.
The Copyright Royalty Board.
That's right. There's an organization called Sound Exchange, and their whole not-for-profit status is you have to pay them set amount a year based on your total aggregate tuning hours is how that works out.
Right.
And it's not, you know, for non-commercial stations, it's not horrible, but it's another expense.
Right.
So you've got your ASCAP, CSAC, BMI, and all those guys dipping into your pocket. You've got the Sound Exchange. It's very, very expensive, especially
Sound Exchange is an arm of the RIAA, by the way.
It is, but they're a not-for-profit organization that's in charge of, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Collecting
you know,
your profits.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's good. We're not for profit, but we still collect your profits. Yeah.
Now, what they've done is fine-tuned this to the point where you're just bled short of dry.
Mm-hmm. 70% of your income. If you had to pay 70% of your income for taxes.
Yeah, some people do.
Right, we'd have another revolution.
Right.
It's unbelievable. It is the biggest joke ever. You know what I mean? I mean, it's one of those things that, in our case, for my other job, we have a limit of listeners that we can have on our stream. You got 100 listeners max. Mm-hmm. After 100 listeners, that's all you can, or you know, however many that they have set, they don't care about that. And oh, by the way, they don't bill you. You have to remember to pay them every year. They accrue certain percentages of late fees every day.
Yeah, so you can cap your stream to 100.
Yeah.
But you can't cap your radio signal.
That's correct. Yeah, the radio side is a whole different thing where you've got a set amount of money.
And it's reasonable.
It's very reasonable.
Right.
For them. But then they're like, ooh, we can make more money on internet streams.
Right.
And, you know, it's unbelievable.
And I have to reiterate, this is strictly for stuff the RIA controls. So, for example, if you had a talk show that you produced, you could broadcast that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to 200 million people. Nobody's got anything to say about it. It's strictly the music station where this is a problem.
And you've got a lot of radio stations, too, that are branching off similar to HD, and they have 5, 10, 15, 20, you know, web streams that people can go on and do, you know, radio stations are starting to come out with secondary web streams.
Right.
And so that becomes an additional expense as well. And you're right. They really bleed you until you're
dead.
And
all of that's going to be dead anyway when all these places cap you at 5 gigabytes a month, which, by the way, I hit 3 days into the month. And I don't do a lot of that stuff, but, you know.
And we're all for artists getting money for their artistic work. But
of course.
Exactly.
If I could choose to pay the guy who wrote the song a buck, rather than
bureaucrats
getting all the money before the guy that actually wrote the song.
Right. The other part we have to remember is that the artists get very little, if any, of this money.
Yeah. Right.
Well, the interesting was the big thing with the Beatles? Who's the one left alive? McCartney. Sorry.
And Starr.
Ringo Starr. Ringo Starr,
but nobody counts him.
Yeah, right.
Paul McCartney just changed all of their listings in for songwriting material, put himself above John Lennon as co-writer. because as lead co-writer, he gets more money every time you play a Beatles song.
Well, right. The interesting thing about
he needs his money now that his wife is gone and took it all.
I get the question almost daily, why don't you podcast your music radio station? And you have to explain to every person, you cannot archive music, essentially, and that's what podcasting is. People don't get that it could mean tens of thousands of dollars of fines by having a music podcast. Now, again, you guys can podcast your show all day long because it's talk.
Is that different from archiving?
If you bring an artist onto the show who does his or her original music and they say, go ahead and podcast it, you can do that all day long.
Right. The problem there is the artists are almost always under contract to a label, and the label owns
the independent artist.
Yeah.
And the independent stations, of which there are a bucket load, will also not have a problem with that.
And that almost becomes the joke, is when you're an unknown, you want your stuff out, and then when you get your multimillion-dollar record contract, start paying me.
Right.
And stop.
The bottom line is that internet radio stations, as you said, Nick, they're going to go away. And it stinks. It really does.
Yeah, it really does.
They're going to go
it's
away.
It's just for greed. And then rather than getting some money, they get no money.
That's right.
All right, we're going to take... Wow, we just killed a segment. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Wright, Chris Wright, Rob Linton, Minnie Francesco, and you 51 minutes after their soundbites at 11:80. I'll see you. All right, folks, we are back. We have we only have about a minute before we have to go away again. So let me just quickly say, if you are on the line, please stay on the line. We will take you after the break. But to get back to net radio just very quickly, obviously... Nobody knows what's really going to happen with net radio. This is just what's been planned. There are certainly protests planned against it. There are certainly people who are bringing up lawsuits and everything else. This is not affecting radio as radio. Radio qua radio will still be on the air. This is strictly the audio streams over the internet that are playing regular music. That's the deal there. It's not... podcasts like ours. It's not podcasts like Leo Laporte or
Alex Jones, any of those things.
But if there's music on the podcast, that's
a problem. If it's regular commercial music, if it's an independent artist who hasn't signed with anyone, which is what makes you an independent artist, then that's not a problem. So there's a whole bunch of nobody has an answer yet. Your favorite podcast isn't or. Audio stream is not likely to go away immediately, but certainly there is the possibility of that happening.
Stay tuned, Film at 11.
Exactly. We're going to take a break. It is time for the news, the weather, the sports, all the things you really listen to Wham for. We'll be back on the other side with all the things that we do. Please stay on the line if you're on the line. I'm Nick Francesco with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton. It is 57 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on 1180 WHA. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Now, as you know, every week, we do a poll. Last week, except, of course, there was no poll because I was out of town and I grew up and didn't put one together. This week's poll...
No, you were on vacation. You're allowed a vacation.
I know. I was allowed a vacation. I had a great time, so that with everybody.
And the world continued to turn, and the sun came up in the morning.
That's exactly right.
Everything's fine.
So I clearly was completely significant. But that's okay. We had a very good time. We had a very nice time. We spent the weekend. We went to the Renaissance Festival. And then I took the whole week off, and I did nothing. I was so great. It was so great.
That's why they call it a vacation.
I was built for retirement. I really was. All right, but here's our poll of this week. Windows Vista, as I said earlier, has not fared well since its debut. Its generally low reputation among customers has led one Forrester analyst to dub Microsoft's latest OS the new Coke of tech. While some studies have suggested that nearly a third of customers who buy a PC with Vista pre-installed may actually be downgrading those machines to XP, I find that impossible to believe that it's as low as a third. I think it would be more like a half or three quarters. Still, other customers seem to wish the whole thing would just go away. They don't want to hear about Vista. They'd rather hear about Windows 7, the next operating system for Microsoft that will be Vista's successor. And given the dismal consumer reaction to its latest attempts to market Vista, Microsoft seems willing to oblige. The sketchy early reports of Windows 7 have lately grown into a steady trickle of hints and rumors. The catch is, not all of it sounds particularly encouraging. Perhaps because of the beatings it so often receives from the press, Microsoft seems to want you to get your Windows 7 news from the horse's mouth, or at least one end of the horse, as much as possible. To that end, the Windows team has launched a new blog to chronicle the Windows 7 engineering efforts in detail. Senior Windows 7 product managers John Devane and Steven Sanofsky promise to post, comment, and participate regularly. Among the factoids revealed in their blog so far, the workforce tasked with assembling the forthcoming OS is immense. Yeah, that'll help. And it's dense with middle managers. That's excellent. As many as 2,000 developers may be involved, according to reports, and a whole bunch of middle managers in their way. 2,000 programmers, whole bunch of middle managers. That is a recipe for crappy software. Sorry, that's just true.
That's a great, big, enormous committee is what that is.
Exactly. That sounds like a truly Herculean project management undertaking, and indeed, if the figures quoted in the Windows 7 blog are to be believed, Microsoft is staffed up with one manager for every 4 developers, and there are 2,000 developers, so you may do the math, 500 managers. Okey-dokey.
All of whom have to get paid out of the proceeds from the sale of this software.
Well, more importantly, with all of that middle management and that many programmers and that level of micromanagement, how do you avoid all the implementation failures and all the missed deadlines and all the delays and all the oops, we forgot that happened under Vista? I don't know. But that's not the only evidence of Microsoft's recent lip loosening either. Elsewhere this week, we learned that some even more interesting information we've known for a while now, that Windows 7 is expected to build on the Vista code base rather than reinventing any substantial portion of the Windows kernel. As it turns out, however, the next version of Windows may be even closer to the current one than we expect. According to Microsoft spokes individuals, the server version of Windows 7 will be considered a minor update rather than a high-profile new product. In fact, it's expected to ship under the name Windows Server 2008 Release 2, a designation that suggests it will offer few features that aren't already available in the current shipping version of Microsoft Server OS, but for which I am sure they will be happy to charge us the full price.
Yeah.
Hard facts, no matter what else they're saying, hard facts about Windows 7 remain scarce. At this point, any talk about the forthcoming product counts as little more than free marketing, which I apparently am helping along in that.
Well,
Did you hear about the Mojave experiment?
Yeah. Well, but the thing is, before you do that, one more sentence. As long as we all keep talking about Windows in one form or another, the less likely we are to jump ship to Mac OS X or, heaven forbid, Linux.
So the Mojave experiment, apparently Microsoft is admitting that people don't like Vista and it has a bad press. So it sounds like a good idea, but the way they did it was so stupid. They disguised a bunch of computers and brought in 150, 200 people to see, you want to see what the next version of Windows is going to look like, and they called it Mojave. It was just Vista. And so everyone loved it, and all the gadgets and the widgets and the arrow, and it was all cool. So they put up this video on the website, MojaveExperiment.com. The first 20 minutes is people saying how much they hate Vista.
Yeah.
Most people only look at a website for 3 or 4 minutes.
Right, so all they're going to hear is
how much
Vista
people
sucks.
Hate Vista,
right.
Yeah.
And, well, the problem really is, if you've, and I've said this a million times, if you get a brand new machine and put Vista on it, mm-hmm. it's going to run very well.
If it's high-powered
enough.
And
if it's a high-powered enough machine with bucket loads of RAM, bucket loads of speed, and bucket loads of video, it will run fine. I've never said anything against that. The problem is when you put Vista on an underpowered machine, or you upgrade to Vista and all the problems you had with XP are multiplied in Vista, it becomes impossible to fix. It becomes impossible to deal with. And that's a lot of what gives.
And especially if you've had your computer for a few years, say you started with 98 and upgraded to XP, or even if you bought if you got a new machine with XP, that was, what, 7 years ago?
Right.
That's an old computer.
But still, going back to what Nick said, you get the brand new machine. I agree with Nick. It works fine. Now you run into the issue of, you try putting on some of your other software that works fine on XP.
Brand new computer, brand new software, brand new printer. You cannot use anything old.
Right.
And then Vista's okay.
Right.
And the other thing is, too, it won't do it. If you have an old Windows 98 machine and you want to move your data over to the Vista machine, won't work.
Right.
Why not?
The file and transfer system only works for moving from XP to Vista.
Now, you've got that other program, the little hardware box that you use. That might
it can be done manually, though, right?
You can do it manually, yes, Tornado. But within Windows XP, they had the file and transfer wizard, which is another good way to back up all your emails and documents and your desktop and everything else, and occasionally burn that to a CD or a DVD, depending on the size. But like Nick was saying, though, brand new out of the box, it works fantastic. But the minute you start adding other hardware, other software, don't be surprised if it doesn't work.
The other big issue people run into is you see the $399 computer deals at the big box stores. That's going to come with not enough RAM, not a big enough hard drive, and it will, you know, what is it, Windows Vista Basic or Starter,
right. Yep.
And you don't get any of the cool advantages of Vista anyway.
Watered right. down.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it's a great machine for learning Linux on.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's good
yep.
for. Anyway, the poll this week is Windows 7, and the choices are Can't Wait, Vista Forever, XP Forever, Dixon Ticonderoga Number 2 Forever, the Mac, and the Linux.
So it took me half a second to remember what a Ticonderoga Number 2 was.
And just for the benefit of everybody else, it is?
A pencil.
It's a number 2 yellow pencil. Exactly right. Got 105 votes so far. XP Forever is on top with 44% of the votes. 22% of the votes going to Linux, followed by Can't Wait, the Mac, Dixon Ticonderoga Number 2 Forever, and Vista Forever. Now, the big thing is, I know you people have a lot to say about things like Windows 7 and just, you know, clicking a little button and hitting submit, that doesn't do it for you. So if you look underneath the poll, you'll see a yellow box. If you click on Give Us Your Opinion, it takes you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
That was the other thing about Woz. Someone caught a picture of Woz sitting in the front row at The Price is Right.
Excellent.
He didn't get called up as a contestant, though, because he would have been one of those that knows the exact price of everything.
But anyway, you get to my website, and you can give your opinion up to 256 characters. Well, actually, fewer than, so it's 255 characters. 9 people have put in something so far. Try to keep it clean. Well, yeah, I hate having to clean this stuff out. While you're there, take a look around. I put out a newsletter. You can search the old newsletter. That alone is worth the $15 a year. We have a forum. We have the newsletter. We do all of that stuff. I've been a little lax this summer, I admit it. And then exactly right. Exactly right. All right, we've got, I think, time for a phone call before we go out. So let's go back to the phones. Our next caller is Bill from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I don't have a question. I think I might have what could be a solution for your Windows installer problem.
Ah.
I have had some experience where I've seen some nasty things that will go in and change the properties of that. If you boot to safe mode,
mm-hmm.
you browse to the actual executable, and you right-click on it and you go to properties, you can go to security, and I have had some success with being able to reset the rights for the administrator that had originally been. It looks like the original rights were changed.
I've seen some cases where malware will create a brand new user to do its work in and then change permission of Windows programs to that user only, so you can't stop it from running.
Right. There's also...
good. That's a really good tip.
That's an excellent tip, Bill. Yeah. Thank you.
But I have seen that work, and then you are able to, and you know that particular, you're then able to stop and restart the service. So, okay.
Excellent. Thank you so much. That's a great idea. So you check to see who actually has permissions, who owns the process, and to whom they've given permissions.
That's a good one.
I ran into that on my mother's PC that someone had broken in through some back door in Windows, changed her username to something else, created their own username to remotely control it.
Yep. I have to look into that.
Excellent point, Bill. Thanks.
Trying to hunt some of this down, you could literally spend a week trying to find all the places that it can hide in the registry and every place else, because there are literally thousands and thousands of places that these folks hide this stuff, or into the, the restore volumes. They'll put a program there that'll execute out of it and go into the registry and randomly put it in different spots.
And then, of course, now with Active Directory and with Vista and everything, you've got GPOs. Group policies, and the policies could be changed, and unless you know to look in the policies and all of that stuff, there's a lot of places to look nowadays. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We are getting to the folks on the phone. Stay on the line. What the heck, you're getting entertainment anyway. We don't care. It's 19 minutes after the hour with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, really, truly, it's right back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Parenton, New York. Mike, are you there?
Hello, gentlemen. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. I have a part question regarding an iMac dual boot. We're about to buy a new iMac, and my question is, if I understand setting up dual boot, there are basically two ways to do it. You can buy VMware or Parallels and then install Windows on that, or you can install it with the native program whose name I can't recall offhand.
Well,
And the big advantage of installing it native is that it takes full use of all of the video processing and everything, the memory and everything. Unlike VMware or Parallels, you may not be able to run PC software. Like I was going to install XP for, Pro or Standard.
Mike, do we presume you're going to dual boot with Windows XP?
Probably XP. I'm not sure whether it'll be Standard or Pro.
Yeah. You're actually talking about two different concepts. Dual booting is something that Apple supports directly themselves. They have a program called Boot Camp.
That's the one.
Where you reboot into Windows only. And you are correct, as it does take full advantage of all the hardware, the graphics. It is a Windows PC, period. The other method is called virtualization. And that's with programs like Parallels and VMware, where you're running a virtual machine inside of your Mac to run Windows. And oftentimes that's more convenient because you don't have to reboot. Although, for graphic-intensive programs like games, and as I found out, Second Life, although that could just be I've got a shared graphics on my laptop. For graphic-intensive programs, virtualization doesn't work that well. But for regular programs, in some simpler games, I play pinball in my virtual machine because it's a pretty neat pinball game. Well, that works fine.
Well, we run a lot of educational software, which can sometimes be graphic-intense, so it sounds like dual boot is the way to go rather than the virtual.
Well, and you can run them together, too. A lot of people, when they know they want to do graphic stuff like that, they will create a dual boot. The biggest thing is partitioning your hard drive enough in the first place.
I've heard that if I do that, the problem is I got to buy two seats of XP, and it's already tough to support Bill with one seat.
Well, if you put Windows on your Mac, you have to buy a seat of Windows, period.
Right, but if you want to do both the native version when you install that, I'm told that if I then buy VMware or Parallels...
Well, yes, if you install it a second time, then you would need a second license.
Even though it's on the same machine?
I think so. It's based on installs.
I'm pretty sure that's the,
yeah.
Pretty sure that's
so what you do is you point the virtualization to your Boot Camp partition. So
Oh, really?
It uses the same copy of Windows, which is very convenient because you install a program under virtualization and it's also installed when you have to reboot under Boot Camp because it's the same copy of Windows.
So do you do a Boot Camp install first?
Do your Boot Camp install first, and then you can load Parallels or VMware and point it to your Boot Camp partition.
Do you have an opinion on Boot Camp versus VMware?
Boot Camp is faster. VMware is more convenient because you don't have to reboot.
VMware is going to work great for you if you max out your memory. If you're not planning to max out the memory, go to the Boot Camp.
Yeah, with either Parallels or Boot Camp virtualization, you want to get
Hold on. There's an understanding that needs to be made here, which is that Boot Camp is the dual boot program.
Right, rebooting into Windows only.
Parallels is the virtualization program. Right,
Parallels,
so they're really very different.
Yeah, Parallels and VMware are both virtualization programs.
Right.
And since you are running two OSs at the same time, in essence, you want at least 2 gigs of RAM. 4 gigs is better. That way each OS gets 2 gigs of RAM.
The only other question with respect to this, using the Mac and the PC, in the PC world, I've convinced my family to put everything in My Documents. Is there a shared folder across both sides?
But the Macintosh sees your Boot Camp partition as a hard drive, so you can copy files out of it. And that brings up the mess of NTFS versus FAT32. If you format the Windows partition as FAT32, then the Macintosh can read and write files on it. However, FAT32 is limited to a 32 gigabyte partition. And if 32 gigabytes isn't enough for your Windows side, you have to switch to NTFS. But then the Macintosh can read an NTF volume, but not write to an NTF volume. We're still waiting for the Unix world to come up with a good NTFS write file system for Unix, so the Mac can use that as well.
Gosh, it's only been how many years? I'm surprised they haven't done something about that problem. I forgot about that.
Now, within the Mac itself, there's a shared folder for sharing among different users, same way there is under Windows, to share documents with different users under Windows. Between Mac and Windows, the typical thing is to use a FAT32 partition so that you can read and write to that Windows partition. Both Parallels and VMware will treat your Macintosh as a network drive. So inside of the virtual Windows machine, you can access your Mac files and vice versa.
I see. Well,
but it does get confusing because you're running two OSs at the same time, and there are each OS has its own issues that you have to deal with.
It works great if you have dual screens. You put one OS on each screen. That's slick.
That's a neat way to do it, yep. Yeah, one of the big problems as Chris is running into is printers, especially USB printers, and in general, any USB device. If you're running a virtual machine, a USB device is only accessible by one OS at a time. So if you're running a USB printer on the Mac, you can't use it under Windows. You have to grab the USB by Windows to print, and then you can't use it on the Mac. So the workaround for that was to attach it to the Mac as your what's called your host OS, share it to your network, and then have Windows see it as a network printer. And then they can both catch the printer at the same time, or just get a network printer directly so both OSs talk to the printer over the network.
It's easier.
Right. That's my next purchase, has to be a network printer. All right, our next caller is Dick from Penfield, New York. Welcome, Dick. What's your question?
Morning or good afternoon. I got Firefox 3. My address bar, I'm having trouble clearing it.
What happens when you try?
They change how you do it. Normally, in your address bar, if you click the icon, it highlights the whole address, and you can just type something new.
Right.
Now they've changed that, so when you click the icon bar, it shows you information about that website.
Yep. Right, but what when I hit the, I get the drop-down box for all the websites.
Right, and you want to clear that out.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, it's still, so it's not the address bar, it's the history.
Yeah, if you go under preferences.
Yeah. Well, how do you get the preferences?
Under the edit menu.
I don't see preferences there.
The very bottom one? Or maybe under Mac.
On the Mac or on Windows running Firefox 3?
I'm on Windows running Firefox.
Might be under tools.
Preferences. No, options. There's only
options.
It might be called options on Windows. Preferences on Mac.
Okay, options, but I've tried that, clearing it that way.
And you go to privacy?
Yeah, I've done all that. It only happened since I started putting Firefox 3 in. So this morning I went to Firefox 2, check it out, and I put some stuff on Firefox 2 and I tried clearing it out and I cleared it out, so I went back to Firefox 3.
I guess our question is what exactly you're trying to clear and from where?
Okay. You know, you're dropped out your address bar when you get all of them drop down boxes?
Right. You want from the drop down bar,
your history.
Yes, the history for the address
bar. Right, that's not the address bar, that's the history bar.
Okay, well.
No, he wants the address bar. If he types www.soundbites.org, and then on the right of that, there's that little down arrow. You click that, you see where you've been.
Right, that's the history.
Right.
If you clear your history.
I've tried that.
Another feature.
To private and security and cleared all that stuff out. And it won't do it in Firefox 3, but it will work in Firefox 2.
Clear browsing history, clear form and saved search history. Let me try clearing that now and see if it happens on my computer. No, he's right. My history is still there.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, there's.
Well, the history is gone, but the recent websites is still there.
Which is different than history. And this is a problem that Firefox 3 actually has.
Mm-hmm.
You can sort of fix that. If you, in that, where you type your URLs, if you type about:config, it will bring up your configuration.
I get a message that says, this might void your warranty.
Hey, Bill.
I'll be careful, I promise.
For what?
Firefox 3.
Right. Yeah. If you type about:config and go through the name, you'll see a list of all the things that are available. There's also a search bar right underneath the address bar. If you type in browser, .url bar.match only typed, you'll see a line. If you double click on that and set it to true, then it won't then clear your history. Then the location bar should be empty.
That's annoying.
Theoretically. I've not tried that, but theoretically that should work.
Let's see if Mozilla has instructions on how to do that in their
A couple tips PC Magazine had 22 different tips or something like that that you can do with Firefox 3, the different options and everything else. You have controls. You can have a display when you start typing a website out and how it'll display maybe only 10 current sites. You can set it to show 20 if you want.
Right. It's called the address bar history, not the website history.
Right, and that's not clearable directly from the interface. You have to do it with that match only type. And that will help, at least. That doesn't necessarily make it 100%, but it means that you don't see anything you've typed before. And then clear the history, and that should be gone. That comes from the Mozilla support website directly. So
there's an add-on called Clear Address Bar History.
There you go. Oh, there you go. Just add that add-on, and then you're on your way. All right, our next caller.
Oh, you don't want to do that?
Yeah, we will at the next break, I promise. I know I forgot it completely. I completely forgot. No. For those of you waiting for Dave's rant, we'll get to it after the next break. I promise you, I completely forgot about it. When we decided not to do it at the top of the hour because we didn't have time, it just went out of my head. But he'll remind me this before we come back. Our next caller is John from SOTUS, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Hi, gentlemen. How are you guys today?
Peachy, how are you?
Good, thanks. I'm running Windows XP Professional on a laptop. It's an IBM laptop. Mm-hmm. And I recently booted it from the opposition for it's a cold reboot, and I got a message that really has got me upset here. I got two messages. One of them said a media test failure, check cable, and of course I was okay on that. The other one, right underneath it, said this, TXE-M0F as in Frank, with a colon saying exiting Intel boot agent, operating system not found. Am I in big trouble?
You could be.
That's never a good thing.
It could be hard drive on its way out.
The media test failure means that the Ethernet isn't working because it was trying to do a net boot because it can't find your hard drive.
Yeah, you could have a hard drive that's going. If you've got another machine, and can put it on disk or burn it to CD, is a spin write, which will then do a diagnostics on your hard drive.
And try to recover data from the hard drive.
But it won't even turn on. I mean, after I get that message, then that's it.
Well, it is. Right. Your computer is turned on. It just won't boot that disk.
Right. Yeah. What you need to do is at some other machine download and burn a bootable copy of SpinWrite.
Which is a commercial program.
It's a commercial program. It's $80. So if there's data on your hard drive, you need to get back.
$89, if I'm not mistaken.
$89.99, maybe.
Right, and that if you have data you need to get back, it will do its best to resurrect your hard drive.
Okay.
And honestly, if SpinWrite can't resurrect it, nothing can resurrect it.
That's right.
Well, there's sort of two classes of hard drive failure. Yeah. SpinWrite does soft failures where the blocks get corrupted or something like that.
I've got some software.
Then you go to someplace like Dave does it, or Drive Savers is
Drive
a commercial.
Savers, they literally take it apart.
They take it apart, look at it bit by bit, and you get a bill for a couple $1,000.
Oh.
No, they actually come down. I've had a number of clients go.
Yeah.
The
last estimate I got, they said it's going to be between $500 and $2,500.
Yeah.
Depending on how long it takes.
Yes, right.
If we can get it easy, it's $500. If it takes a long time and it's hard, it's
$2,500.
Right. Now, I'll just throw one more thing in the mix here. When I first got that, I was very upset, so I turned it off and I rebooted, and it went back on, and it worked fine until maybe I was working on the computer for another 40 minutes or so, and then it went off again, and then I got that message again. So probably is indicative of the
intermittent.
Hard drive.
Yeah. If you can get it booted again, back up everything you can.
Yeah, get all your documents off it.
That may have been the last good boot you'll get out of it, though. Uh-huh. We've seen that happen for some of our customers.
One of you guys can do for it. If I bring it into you guys.
Dave can at least take a look at it, but it is going to cost you money.
Oh, yeah, I understand.
Whether it works or not, it's going to cost you money.
Yeah, we charge you a diagnostic up front, and then we just tell you what it would be to fully get all the stuff off.
All right.
You know, the neat thing about SpinWrite is it's magic and what it can do.
Diagnostic.
It's 140K.
Yeah, he wrote it all in hand.
Handwritten assembly.
Yeah.
And it'll work if the drive spins.
Right, if the drive spins at all. All right, and this is just a reminder to each and every one of you listening to back up all your documents now. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Gray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 40 minutes, 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Gray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, finally, ladies and gentlemen, it is time to grab your footy jammies, a mug of hot cocoa and sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair, because if we can slap him awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Oh, this is going to be bad. Uncle Dave! Uncle Dave!
You let me sleep for 2 weeks.
I know it.
So this one's your fault.
And we let you sleep late the second week, too.
Hey, Mr. Wizard! I hate to inform you, but my great data jammer analyzer is broken and won't be ever fixed again. And what do I mean by that? Is when you bring a machine in, I'm sorry, when we do a test on it and then are trying to move data, there's no crystal ball around that will allow me to tell you how fast it's going to go. It's the old adage, and it's a tried and true statement. It depends. It
depends.
That's the best we can do.
It may take an hour. It may take a week.
And you calling every 3 hours isn't going to get it done any faster. As a matter of fact, it's slowing me down because instead of working on your machine, I'm answering the phone talking to you.
When's it going
to
be done? Well, I could get it done faster if you'd keep me off the phone.
You and eight other people.
Yeah. And it's like, well, shouldn't it be done by now? I don't know. I'll ask the hard drive. When it tells me an answer, I'll let you know. But right now, they don't. They just do the work. They try to, you know, do the repair. And then once we do the repair, it takes time to get it over to another drive. Things just don't happen magically.
I had a good one this week that you liked. A student brought her computer in, wanted something done to, I forget now. And she said, yeah, my plane leaves in an hour. Can you have it done then?
I had one ready.
No, your plane leaves in an hour. Why aren't you at the airport now?
Yeah. What was it? 2-3 weeks ago, I started warning parents to start bringing stuff in, and this was the same case. This is the same thing. I'm trying to do it as fast as I can, but they're getting ready to leave. Well, good for them. Hello, they've been home for the whole summer, and I can't rush it.
You can't. He doesn't do miracles.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, we do, but...
You can ship the laptop to college after they leave.
Here's the thing that I've never understood, and I'd like somebody to call in and explain to me why these two cases are completely different. If you say to your parents, you know, my car's not running right, I need it fixed before I go to school. Everybody says, well, let's turn it in 2 weeks, 3 weeks before you go back to school, because they're going to take a few days, maybe a day or two, to do it. Oh, my computer's not working. Well, what the hell? Your plane doesn't leave for an hour. Let's go take it now. Why are those two things so different? It takes the same amount of time because you're in line with a bunch of other people. Let me give you folks a clue. Here's Uncle Nick's rant. Let me give you folks a clue. Dave, Steve, there is no vendor worth their salt in the world who is actually doing nothing but sitting around in their office desperately praying that you will bring your computer into them. They are working on other people's computers. When you bring your computer in, you're probably going to be in line. That person who came to your place and had an hour till their plane knew they had missed their plane because they were supposed to be in line for an hour. It's the same idea in these places. It takes time to fix your machine. They do work miracles. One of those miracles is not stopping time.
We had another one where a woman brought her computer in the morning and wanted to wait for it to be done. Well, okay, but the technician won't get to it for a while.
Right.
And so she sort of left in a huff, called the next morning and said, when can you look at it? Last night, if you'd have left it.
It takes a day. It takes maybe 2 days, 3 days.
And I'm sorry, my flux capacitor data jammer analyzer can't be fixed, will not be fixed.
The crystal ball is cloudy. That's the phrase we use.
Yeah, right.
I dropped the crystal ball a long time ago. I mean, sorry, that I gave up.
No, and you probably broke it over somebody's head.
Yeah, probably throwing it at him. But anyways, it just won't happen, folks. I'm sorry. There's just no way. Well, shouldn't it only take this long? Again, I'll ask the hard drive. When it gives me an answer, I'll let you know.
Now, we do use a lot of car analogies. You take your car to the shop. You have no idea how long it's going to take. One of the problems there is the known quantities. The fuel pump is broke. We know what it's going to take, and we know about how long it's going to take to repair.
We know we can get one in 20 minutes from the dealer.
Right, and it takes about an hour to replace it.
Right.
It's very much different on the computer. It's like you take your car to the garage, it's making a funny noise. And that's all you know, and that's all you tell the guy.
Right. It's going to take longer to fix that than look, my axle's broken.
In fact, I did that. I had to take my car to the garage a week or so because it was making a funny noise and it overheated on the way to Toronto. That was fun. I'm stuck in traffic on the bridge on the QEW.
Yeah, yeah.
That giant bridge there just outside of Queens. And the car's overheating.
Nice.
Fortunately, I could coast down the bridge with the car. Right. So I take it into the shop. They can't reproduce that symptom, of course. But the funny noise it was making, $1,000 for a new air conditioner compressor pump.
Excellent.
I don't need the air conditioner to work. Yeah, but it's part of the serpentine belt. It has to work.
Right.
Freezes up, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, folks, you know, I mean,
Steve and I just cannot tell
how long it's going to take to analyze each bit of data when it's doing its test. And especially now with these hard drives, we're not talking 250 meg of data. Usually it's 160 gig of data is the smallest hard drive.
That's 160 billion bytes that we have to look at. Item machine take 3 months, literally on the desk, scanning for 3 months and recovered everything. Months.
All right, kiddies.
And then 5 minutes and recover nothing.
All right, we're going to have to slap everybody down. So get your footy jammies off, put on your aprons, and grab your butcher knives because we're going after all three of them. All right, that's it. We're going to take a break. Are we taking a break? Why do you give me that face?
That's the end of one music and the start of the next music.
Sure, we could take a break.
Would that make you happy?
I am at your service. You're the boss. You know.
Oh, he says that on the air. Then we get off the air. It's like, what the hell's wrong with you? Did I give you a signal? No, I did not give you a signal. Do not do anything that didn't involve a signal. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Wright. Rob, I'm in charge whether you think so or not and whether I tell you or not. Linton, Mina, Francesco, and you, 50 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, 1180 WHEM. I'm in. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 55 minutes after the hour, I'd really like to apologize to each and every person on the air for not listening in on that last commercial break.
I should switch the recording over to my ambient mic.
Oops.
If you do, I will hunt you down like a dog you are.
It will be encrypted in so many bits you can't count them.
That's exactly right. All right, our next caller is Jim from Kendall, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm just having a problem. The other day I downloaded Norton 360 for my security.
Mm-hmm.
And
you can't
my
get out.
Internet browser is blocked.
Yep.
Yeah, that's one of the problems with these big security suites is that they are overly aggressive. It's sort of the point of a firewall is to block traffic on the internet, except traffic you want through the internet. And it gets a little over aggressive about what it blocks. It blocks everything, and then you have to tell it what not to block.
Right. I went through the whole support tutorial, and I clicked allow on the browser, and I still got nothing. My email works. The Outlook Express works, but not the browser.
Uninstall that and go to Zone Alarm.
Go to what?
Zone Alarm.
Yeah, Zone Alarm for Firewall and AVG or Avast for antivirus. We recommend a lot of the free programs instead of one of the big suites.
Norton just tries to do too much.
Yeah, they do too much. They bog your computer down. They're harder to configure.
On the other hand, his computer is now quite secure.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, nothing can get it. Well, he said he's using Outlook Express for email, so it's...
Well, yeah,
it's,
that's not it's very pretty, secure, right?
Yeah, not very secure for that. You should switch over to something like Thunderbird as a much safer email client. Yeah, going into the Norton firewall settings and finding all of the pieces of the browser, and not, you know, it's sometimes it's not just the .exe file. You got to open DLLs. What's that generic service host you have to open?
Yeah,
SVC HST, isn't it?
Yes,
yeah. Something like that. SVC
but the bad programs use the generic service host too. So it's
damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Yeah. Right. So this is not an uncommon problem. You know that sometimes that makes you feel better at least.
Yeah.
Well, and for those of you who have not bought one of these suites yet, you know we've had several calls already today about them.
Should they tell you something.
They're great ideas. They're good things. They're just not easy to use, and unless you're willing to spend hours reading documentation and hours setting up every little port and every program and everything, they may not be for you. And while they can provide great security, they aren't necessarily more secure than a good firewall like Zone Alarm, used with a good antivirus program like AVG or Avast, and a good set of anti-spyware programs like Super Anti-Spyware, and AdAware and SpyBot. So if you can manage to use those instead, you will probably find that they will do as well, be smaller in footprint, and much, much easier to set up. All right. So that music tells me that Rob doesn't want me to talk anymore. Wait, actually what it tells me is that we are done for another week. I really want to thank everyone who called in. I apologize to those to whom we did not get. Please call earlier next week, because clearly we were having way too much fun today. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, who comes in here every week, whether we want him to, rain or shine, and gives us his expertise in putting together this whole system. And, of course, Rob Linton, who seems to have finally woken up today. It was great to see him. I'm Nick Francesco, 58 minutes after the hour, Soundbites. Thanks for listening.